politics got you down. Welcome to the show where we don't care what political party you follow. We only care if you can write good code. This is Security Weekly News Wrap-Up for the week of 12 January 2020. We had a lot of great content this week, news and more for you as we wrap it up. So don't touch those dials, and we'll be right back with Security Weekly News Wrap-Up.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week, your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News. Make sure your team is prepared to fight off the latest cybersecurity threat. IT Pro TV is the resource to keep you and your IT team skills up to date. You can stream IT Pro TV courses live and on demand, so there's no need to send staff to off-site training. Team subscriptions include Pro Portal, so managers have full control over your team's training schedule. Go to itpro.tv/hack-naked and use the code HN30 to try it free for 7 days and receive 30% off your monthly membership. As technology continues to evolve and expand, so have the countless ways our critical systems can be put in jeopardy. Ransomware attacks, misconfiguration, user error, and malicious threat actors, to name a few. As IT infrastructures continue to grow and diversify, how do you ensure stable security? Core Security, a help systems company, provides an analytics-driven, layered approach to security with a portfolio that enables both proactive and reactive responses. With Core Security, you can reduce risk by limiting access, detect upcoming and active threats, test for security weaknesses, and efficiently monitor data for actionable insights. To learn more, visit securityweekly.com/core security.
Our next webcast is February 13th with Sri Sundaralingam, the Vice President of Product and Solutions Marketing at ExtraHop, where we will discuss cloud native network detection and response. Register for our upcoming webcast by visiting securityweekly.com, selecting the webcast drop down from the top menu bar and clicking registration. I'm your host, Doug White, and welcome to the Security Weekly News Wrap-Up for the week of 12 January. Let's first wrap up all the topics that we covered this week on our various shows. On Security and Compliance Weekly, Matt Scott Lyons and Josh Marpet, you know those guys, talk with Ben Rothke. Ben manages information security at Tapid. This show was focused on all the different personalities you run into when you are doing compliance and audit engagement. From my own perspective, those persons often include angry people with guns and tasers. But maybe that was just me or my personality, so could be. It's hard to say at that point. On Application Security Weekly, Matt, Mike, and John interviewed Hillel Solo, CTO at Checkpoint, and they were discussing the evolution of DevSecOps and AppSec trends in 2020. They looked at unique ways that organizations are leveraging serverless for their applications and how DevSecOps teams are working together to build out all of these architectures at a really fast pace in 2020. On Enterprise Security Weekly, Paul, John Strand, and Matt talked with Mark Orland of Bionic Cyber, cool name. This discussion focused on rethinking security operations in the enterprise company, not the ship. Specifically, defenders really struggle with bias, alert fatigue, turnover, et cetera, all of which result in serious problems. Does good security really just mean creating a monitoring team and investing in products, or is it more than that? I see this problem over and over again, so it may well be time to rethink some of these approaches where we simply focus on buying something and bolting it on and hoping it all works. A second interview on that show covered with Ward Cobley from Viavi Solutions, focused on VISA security alerts. They talked about the need for ongoing networking monitoring and how to react quickly when there are indicators of compromise. I really like the idea that we should focus not just on the fact that an alert happened, but on how we're going to be able to start to identify the scope of that breach. You see that constantly. I get asked that question all the time. People saying, well, when ransomware starts or when we have some kind of a breach, how do we respond? We have a response plan. And my next question to them is, how long does it take you to get that response plan off the shelf, activate all the players, and get somebody actually out doing something? Because so many of these breaches happen so quickly and they're automated. You better be ready because it's coming. On Business Security Weekly, Matt, Jason, and Paul interviewed Al Goose from ServiceMax. That conversation focused on the issues of startup security. Startups are often being run on a small budget, and they have many more limitations on resources than anyone can ever possibly dedicate to security hygiene. And that's going to create issues because as those startups try to focus on enterprise, well, the enterprises may not want to do business with you if you're not compliant. So it's a real challenge for small firms to get to that level of compliance. I've seen that many times. I used to consult for people trying to do that with the DoD, and they had all sorts of issues. And then the DoD would give them guidance, and they would say, well, how on earth can we afford this? Al talks about a framework that will help empower startups with reasonable security controls and how that can be implemented within the limited budgets at those startups. The site for that is security4startups.com. So you can check that out if you're a startup and you're starting to think about how do we approach enterprises who are saying we have to have massive security controls in place. On the Security Weekly News this week, Jason's expert commentary focused on 5G security issues and the issues around sort of rolling standards in telco, because not everybody's on board with 5G on day one that the standard rolls out. So even if we advocate for new security standards in a specific, how does that affect us when we still have to support other protocols that are out there running? And finally, on Paul's Security Weekly, Paul, Larry, Lee, Jeff, and Tyler had a tech segment with Ryan Spears and Jeff Spielberg from River Loop. That segment was about shifting security left. This is essentially data from 10 years of studies finding that it is far more expensive to respond to a single vulnerability disclosure than it would have been to do end-to-end embedded secure design process in the first place. They're basically looking at how you should start identifying security issues. I mean, we've been talking about this for years on Security Weekly, but how do you put this into your development chain? And again, we've been talking about this for years. When you're developing IoT, when you're developing applications, you've got to have security as a component of the entire chain. It can't just be a meeting that you have when you get ready to go beta and talk about the issues that may well be there, especially when you're developing firmware, which is why the problems in IoT become so pronounced, because all this is firmware-based. Changing firmware after the fact, especially in devices that may not be connected, means you've got a massive problem. Security Weekly also took on the marathon undertaking, thanks to the crew, of airing the Hacker Culture Roundtable from the Christmas show. We had all the hosts and a whole bunch of other really cool people on there, and that segment went on for a long time, so you may have to watch it in chunks. Everybody needed a day off after just airing that very, very long show. If you missed the Christmas show back in December, it's definitely worth watching this. I felt like it was a legendary podcast. It was certainly one of my favorites I've ever been on, and I was very honored to get a chance to be there. Based on all the shows this week, my favorite threat of the week was IoT. I really feel like as we continue to expand the space, and wow, are we continuing to expand the space at a terrifying pace, we're really not even considering the impact of the devices that we're adding to our enterprise as well as to our homes, and the implications of all these unknown and untested products are becoming massive threat vectors, and this is in all walks of life. Pretty soon, every thermostat, vehicle, light switch, keychain, microphone, laptop, probably your refrigerator, your stove, you name it in your house, all of these things are going to be connected to the networks, and we don't really have sound approaches to being able to monitor. And if you go back to the earlier segment where you're talking about alert fatigue, just adding hundreds of these devices to your enterprise is going to mean, are you going to end up getting millions of alerts every day? Well, you might. So if you think you have a lot of alerts now, wait till people start bolting on this and every single thermostat in the building has new IoT communication stuff. And I mean, at home, you do have a 24/7 SOC, right? That's staffed. You may need one if you're adding on all these gadgets. My breach of the week for this week, I go through all the news stories that we reported this week and try to pick one that I think is interesting. My breach of the week was really not a breach, but it was certainly dramatic. For the first time that we know of, the NSA, the National Security Administration of the United States, decided to report a discovered vulnerability in a product rather than weaponizing it and using it for themselves. Now, they may have done that anyway, but they did report it to Microsoft. A core component of Windows 10, Crypt32.dll, allows the possible execution of malware code as entirely legitimate and can really lead to a complete violation of the trust chain that you have with applications. This is also found in Server 16 and Server 19. So this thing is very, very intensive. The finding isn't really as exciting maybe to me as the fact that the NSA broke their vow of silence and let everyone know about the issue without just keeping it internal until somebody managed to steal it. This is a major flaw in these operating systems, and it means that you need to patch this urgently. So if you have not looked into this problem, you really should get in there. Microsoft did release a patch, but you will have to do it. And that may mean evaluation, assessment, and so on. I put links to these articles and links to the article about the patch. Things to read up on this week. Probably my number one thing you should probably read up on, it may not apply to you, but it may well, is the end of life of Windows 7 and Server 2008. Those are the biggest things out there to me in terms of having an impact if you at home or you as an enterprise are still using any of those products. Obviously, they don't stop working because, you know, we know some of you are still running Windows XP and maybe somebody's even still running Windows NT. You never stop being amazed when you see the Alt 2600 people post a picture of a Windows NT device that's crashed or something like that. But you probably need to start meeting about what you're going to do if you have these things. How are you going to support them? How are you going to keep them safe? I really encourage you to go out there now and start thinking about this in the future. My experience with these kind of things is things get end of life, they stop being supported, they stop being patched, and then somebody finds a new hole in one of them. Now they're not notifying people that there's a hole. If somebody reports this, you may not know about it, and you're kind of on your own. So how do you actually start getting your enterprise to roll forward, especially if something becomes horrific? What do you do when you have 10,000 obsoleted screens in your enterprise, and how do you move on from that? Can be a very, very large challenge for any enterprise anywhere. My malware of the week was Maze Ransomware. It seems to be growing in occurrence. And not to mention, Maze operators this week started using new tactics, and they released 14 gigs of Southwire files after Southwire, who, if you were following the news last week, Southwire filed a lawsuit against Maze and the hosting service that Maze uses. Even though they don't know exactly who Maze is, but they basically went after Southwire and started releasing their files. So this is a new tactic on the part of ransomware to trickle out your private information before they captured all before they encrypted it, and they start releasing it into the wild if you don't pay up. Yeah, that's a pretty good tactic, actually. In the news this week, Thomas Pornan did a full analysis of the Windows 10 exploit and explains how the vulnerability works in great detail. There were certainly a lot of hits and conversations about this Windows 10 vulnerability alongside of the end of life for Windows 7. So I don't know, maybe it's time to roll back to Warp or something like that, if you remember that. And there are links to all these stories on the wiki, so you can check that out. In the news also, the Department of Homeland Security went after drones. They released a mandate for United States federal agencies to replace, rather than attempt to analyze and repair, the 1,000 or so drones that the Department of the Interior is using due to concerns that all these drones may have contained Chinese chipsets and Chinese malware. That may allow spying activity to occur. These were drones from DJI, which is, they make like 70% of all the drones in the world. And they have essentially been banned by the United States government for use. At the same time, and I think I said DHS earlier, sorry, I meant to say DOI. The DHS issued, on the heels of that, don't know if it's related, an emergency directive, Directive 2002, which orders federal agencies to patch up. They're basically saying you not only need to patch, but you are going to be forced to patch because so many government agencies are behind on analyzing critical patches and they're not being applied, and as such leave those government agencies open to exploits and hack. This is a tough process. We all know that. We've all been involved in patch committees and patch review and all these sorts of things, and we know that trying to get through all that in some kind of reasonable way is very, very challenging. Say it isn't so, TikTok, but you know, we were already worried about content manipulation. We saw those stories last week. TikTok's a massively popular Chinese-based site for video sharing, but Checkpoint this week demonstrated multiple vulnerabilities in the TikTok applications. These vulnerabilities can allow all sorts of malicious links to be sent as spoof texts, and it may be possible in addition to retrieve personal information via the app. So pretty grim news for all the TikTokers out there. There's probably some better name for that, but I don't know what it is. So we'll call them TikTokers for now. Cable Hunt, a critical vulnerability in cable modems, can be used to grab private messages and redirect traffic to other sites, as well as installing botnets. Well, Cable Hunt allows this remote exploit, which would allow someone to gain control of a cable modem remotely. And basically, Cable Hunt has been found now in European cable modems, of which there are about 200 million in use. All the vulnerable modems are listed in a linked article on the wiki, so you can check out to see if you're vulnerable to this. Probably should check it out wherever you are, regardless of Europe, if your ISP is using those particular cable modem. There's also a link established in there to ISPs who have said their modems are clean. In a complicated ethics issue this week, this has come up before, notably in 2015, Apple was asked by the Department of Justice and the FBI to unlock iPhones, which belonged to a shooting suspect in Florida. The President of the United States subsequently tweeted an attack on Apple after Apple refused the FBI request. Very, very similar to this case in California. Apple had refused there and subsequently was ordered by a court to release or to unlock those phones. But by then, the FBI had a third-party hacking group actually crack the phones and get the information. Apple says they don't want to set a dangerous precedent of unlocking devices anytime law enforcement asks them for it and wants it to go through proper legal channels. Like I said, that legal battle back in 2015 resulted in a judge ordering them to unlock the phones. All this is very complicated to me. It's hard to say it's very easy to say, well, okay, here's a bad thing happened. A company should jump in and release people's personal information without any sort of a court order on that matter. Apple says it responds to legal requests, which I presume is related to the Fourth Amendment. If you aren't familiar with that because you're outside the United States or you just haven't kept up with things like that, the Fourth Amendment guarantees you a right to a reasonable expectation of privacy from government agencies and law enforcement. But there's a lot of flack for Apple over this kind of thing because it is a huge ethics issue on whether or not and when. And I think Apple is just trying to stay out of it because they don't want to try to start making those kind of decisions about what is enough. So it's a tricky one. Anwar Batson, a lottery hacker, wrote a brute forcing tool that led to a credential stuffing attack on the United Kingdom's national lottery, was sentenced to 9 months for his role in the attack. He didn't actually conduct the attack. He just wrote a brute forcing tool for some people and supposedly was paid £5. And, you know, okay, that sounds like a pretty cheap deal for them. But he basically got £5 for his role in the attack, and he was sentenced to 9 months in jail. So this is sort of the hacking equivalent of trying to rob a gas station or something like that and ending up with a pretty nasty prison sentence. Honda reported that more than 976 million customers' data may have been leaked. This was due to a database flaw. The database was exposed for at least a week. Basically, they reported that this was due to an unprotected Elasticsearch cluster, which was storing the records for Honda. So just like all those unprotected bit buckets everybody has that gets all your photos of grandma grabbed, well, when you put your data out there, you better start thinking about all the instances of data that may be reflected, copied, hosted, placed in different places, and what kind of security is around all those bit buckets. We see this all the time. Now 976 million people are getting notified that maybe all their data, there was quite a bit of data in that database, was being lost. Microsoft is offering options for switching away from the now end-of-life Server 2008. Basically, Microsoft used this opportunity to tell you you could continue to run 2008 in the Azure cloud. Obviously, upgrading to Server 2008 to a newer version is probably not a bad idea, but if you can't do that, Microsoft's saying you can run it on Azure. In Russian spy news, the GRU went out and apparently attacked and compromised the gas company. So this is called Burisma Holdings, and it is a gas company in the Ukraine. I don't know that they necessarily hacked it. Apparently, the attack was a result of setting up websites which allowed for credential stuffing attacks to be implemented against that. If you're not familiar and you've been under a rock, Burisma Gas or Burisma Holdings Gas Company is at the heart of a scandal in Washington, D.C. that involves the President of the United States and Hunter Biden. The GRU was also involved in election hacking back in 2016. So is all this related? I don't know. I won't get into the politics of it, but it's certainly of interest to a lot of people. Ransomware users have started using the threat of releasing unencrypted data to the public a little at a time if you don't pay up. We reported this story. I mentioned this story earlier. But basically, they went out, they grabbed a bunch of data from Southwire and started releasing that into the wild because Southwire had refused to pay up. This is certainly being adopted by other ransomware droppers. So if you're dealing with ransomware, you may well start getting threatened with this for release. New ransomwares also go out and grab credentials to help facilitate credential stuffing attacks, and all that stuff, of course, is available for sale out in the wild. So lock it down and try to avoid credential stuffing. California started the year off with a new CCPA, the Consumer Privacy Act, which mandates that all Californians will be able to find out what is being collected about them by various companies. This has sort of been called GDPR Lite, based on that European legislation to protect privacy. Supposedly, it won't have much impact on anyone. Facebook and Google and others had already implemented all this stuff in response to GDPR, but it does mean that you can start requesting your data to be dumped. There were several other news articles about people already filing requests to see what was being held on them by Instagram and other California-based companies. It does only apply to people in California. The global cyber insurance market is expected to rise to over $20 billion by 2025 and is rising about 25% per year currently. This is an interesting space to look at. There's a lot of, I think, demand for products. There's a lot of wiggle room in this market currently. And finally, my last story here, Tesla. Tesla jumped back into the pwn-to-own hacking competition this year. So good to see them back there. They're basically promising you can get a new Tesla 3, and if you want to send me a Tesla X, just have it dropped off at the studio in my name, and I'll be very ever thankful for it. But Tesla's offering cash, other prizes, and a Tesla 3 if you can find a vulnerability in their vehicles. So feel free to jump in that. The studio's in Rhode Island. Just put care of Doug White. They'll know who you mean and to get that. So that's the wrap up for the week of 12 January 2020. We'll see you next week on Security Weekly News.